And Alex, and you know, the thing about the extension or the almost the elimination of the turkeys in Missouri, like there were a lot of factors there. You know, one was, and this is not negative on anybody because people just didn't know back then. Mm-hmm. But one was the destruction of the habitat. You mentioned burning, logging at that time in you know, heavily populated areas of turkeys, and people just needing food. I mean, you're talking about the Great Depression right before that, and you know, people in the Ozarks suffered. They needed food. They just went out and killed the turkey. I mean, and that goes back to the lack of regulation.
Boots on my feet, bow in my hand, walking in the early dawn to climb up in my stand.
Redbone, what would you say if I could tell you that you could kill a buck on a certain day?
I would say you're crazy. There's no way to predict how the bucks are going to move.
Well, you're wrong. There's a new camera out called Wise Eye Technologies. These guys can predict the actual deer movement, exact time that a deer is going to come through.
Really? Wise Eye Technology?
This camera has 5-megapixel pictures, has a GPS system built inside, and it's an experience using this camera. It collects data and tells you the movement, wind direction, everything.
On a camera?
On a camera. WiseEyeTechnologies.com.
And how do I find out more information about these guys?
You go to WiseEyeSmartCam.com. I'm using them. You should, too. Make your hunt easier. Use WiseEye.
WiseEye Technologies presents Welcome to America Roots Outdoors. This is going to be a unique, cool show for people coming up. We're going to try to do an 8-part series, maybe even more. We're going to start it off with wild turkey biology. We're going to go all the way from scouting all the way to harvesting and taking care of that gobbler. But we've got a great show lined up, and our guest today is myself, Wayne, and Redbone. And we're going to talk about turkey biology today. But before we do, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl coming up and our high school girls and boys basketball teams. Wayne, Redbone, thanks for running the boards in there in the studio, and I hope you guys are having a good day today.
Good day so far. I've been dealing with some arthritis issues in my neck, pinching on a nerve, but I'm in good shape today.
He looks good, though. He looks good.
So, he looks good.
Well, he looks good.
Well, that's a given.
The little Irishman.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to start with the Super Bowl, Alex. Is that where you want to start?
Yeah, I want to start with the Super Bowl. Man, I really think the Chiefs are going to pull it off. I do. The last four games they've played, guys, have showed me that they are a Super Bowl team. They was making catches that was mind-blowing.
Well, just the game plan in general. And I said it last week, and I'll say it again this week. Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo are masters of picking apart the other team's weakness to win football games. And I know that's what all coaches from high school to college to pros, that's always the objective. Find the opponent's weakness and then try to exploit that weakness. And in the NFL, it gets even harder because, you know, you've got quality, you got the best athletes in the world out there playing on the field.
Right.
But they are masters of finding that weakness. And I feel more confident going into this Super Bowl than I have in any of the others that we were going into.
Really?
I really do.
Well, I know. That's one thing about the Chiefs that I've noticed over the last few years is they show up for big games. You know, you always had those quarterbacks like Elway. You had the quarterback like, you know, Montana, Bradshaw. You know, I could keep name a few more, but
yeah, you forgot about that Brady guy.
He
was pretty good in a big game.
He was
too.
Pretty good in big games. Yeah, 7 of them, as a matter of fact. But yeah, I mean, he just has Mahomes just happens to have that little bit of magic that those guys seem to have for big games.
Yeah, and Purdy is untested,
right,
for San Francisco. And I'm not knocking him; he has had a tremendous season, but he's a little bit untested in that situation.
Right.
We'll see what happens. I think it'll be a really good game.
I'm hoping for a good game.
I think it'll be a really good game, but I do think the Chiefs win.
Score-wise, you think over 70 total?
Over 70 total? No, because I think both defenses are better. I would pick Kansas City 27, San Francisco 22.
Okay. I like that. I'm going 24-27.
Okay.
But I think it can flip either way. I think it's going to be whoever has the ball last kicks the field goal.
It could be. Alex?
I think think it's going to be close as well, guys. I think it's going to be a three-point game. It's going to be a field goal game, possibly one-point game. And I do want to say this about Purdy. Everything he does in his social media is a true mentorship to a lot of young athletes out there that's watching him. And if you watched his interviews, he doesn't brag on himself. He talks about the whole team, and he talks about our creator in every interview. And that inspires me. And, you know, if the Chiefs got beat, you know what? It wouldn't upset me. Yeah, I want to see the Chiefs win, but the example that this guy is leading and giving to the world has truly impressed me. I like the way this young man rose.
Yeah, and I think he's kind of following the example of Patrick Mahomes, because the same thing can be said about Mahomes over the entirety of his, say the entirety of his career, the whole 6 years of it so far. But here's another point, guys. This is interesting. You know, they make a big deal about Brock Purdy being the last guy drafted in the draft last year.
Mr. Irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you know that Isaiah Pacheco, running back for the Chiefs, was only picked six players ahead of Brock Purdy?
Wow. So they both have had successful
careers. Two of the biggest stars in this year's Super Bowl were both picked
in the very last round.
In the last seven players of the last two drafts.
That's amazing.
It tells you how much talent there really is out there in the world, good enough to play in the NFL.
Yeah, and they're both big playmakers, too.
Oh, yeah.
They are. Yeah. All right, moving along, let's talk about high school basketball. The Lady Bobcats, their Bobcats beat Alton the other night. Put a pretty good whipping on Alton.
Yeah, beat them by 25 and got the number one seed in the district because of it. Of course, district tournament's coming up in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, Lady Bobcats are firing on all cylinders right now. They only lost by 1 point to the number five ranked team in Class 5, Cape Notre Dame, over at Charleston last week. The Lady Bobcats are starting to put it all together. They're going to be a force in Class 2.
Yeah. Liberty Eagles ladies have been playing decent ball.
Mm-hmm.
They've been beat by several teams, but they're a young team. You know, they'll be really good next year, you watch. So they've been beat by some good teams. Moving along, talking about boys basketball. You know, you got Mammoth Spring. You got Salem, Mountain Home. You've got all the schools over in the southeast, the Delta Land over there, Cape Girardeau, Sykeston, all those schools over at Dexter.
Yeah, New Madrid County.
A lot of good athletes all across our listing area at Redbone.
Yeah, a lot of good basketball. And of course, season's, you know, coming to an end here in just another, well, from the time you hear the show, one more week of the regular season in Missouri. So for the small schools in Missouri, big schools go an extra week before they start districts. But yeah, it's almost over with, and the cream is starting to rise to the top. And I think we've got several teams within our listening region that have opportunities to go deep in the state tournament. I mentioned just in Class 3, for instance, over on Ava, you got Sparta. Around Springfield, you got Greenwood. You've got here in South Central Missouri, you've got Thayer, obviously, ranked number 3 in the state. And then the Southeast in Class 3, you got Charleston, who's always really good. And you got New Madrid County Central, who has only lost one game all year. And that was just kind of a fluke. And they're ranked number 1, have been all year. They are the defending Class 3 state champions. So, yeah, we got a lot of good basketball in the region.
And if I remember right, I thought I read a post that you put on there that there was one division has 4 of the top 10 ranked. All in the same, you know, local guys, local?
Well, the girls district tournament. The girls, Class 2 okay. girls up at Van Buren, you've got 3 of the top 10 ranked teams in the state in the same district tournament.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that would be East Carter, Thayer, and Alton.
Something's in the water.
And then Neelyville is right on the cusp of being in the top 10. That'll be a handful, too. So that's going to be district tournaments are going to be fantastic.
Yeah. I want to give a big shout-out to all of our radio stations, KSMO, Salem, Missouri, AM, KKOZ, Ava, KWOC, AM, FM, Popper Bluff, KAPE, Cape Girardeau, AM, FM, to all of our listeners out there, and also K-Country 95. Mammoth Spring. Also, a big shout out to our radio sponsors, Monty's Outdoors, Phillips Truck Repair, Dalt Pallet, Redbeard's, Casey's Tree Service, Peddler's Market, Wise Eye Hunt Control, Wagner Heating and Air, Gaither Insurance, DNR Towing. If I forgot somebody, I apologize. I don't think I have. And just want to thank everybody for supporting American Roots Outdoors. And our national sponsors, Buck Grits, Legacy Farm and Land, Wise Eye,
Eagle Seed,
Apex Ammunition, Amped Outdoors. Thank all these companies. We're going to go to a break. We come back. We're going to talk about wild turkey biology. Show one of scouting, understanding, figuring out all the way to dressing that bird and also preparing that bird. Hang with us. We'll be right back with more right after this.
Hey, everybody. This is Michael Watering with Bone Collector, and you're listening to my buddy Alex Rutledge on American Roots Outdoors, man.
Wishing on some love. I've been on a big boy for a while. I can load him in the back of my truck. We can take it to a holler.
Hey, Redbone, did you hear about that new deer feed?
What new deer feed?
Hey, Buck Grits, boys, you ain't heard of that yet?
Buck Grits.
BuckGrits.com.
Well, tell us about it. What makes it better than any other deer feed?
Well, Buck Grits has got the protein a deer needs. It's got the fat a deer needs. It's got the amino acids. It's got the energy. It's got it all, brother. It's going to bring them back after the rut, and it's going to put a rack on their head.
And it's going to help the lactating does, I assume, too, after they have the fawns.
That's right. Keep the fawns going and get them for the next crop.
Well, where can I get Buck Grits?
BuckGrits.com. You can get a sample. You can order it directly from the website, and we're coming to a retailer near you.
If you want
to
help a deer herd, use Buck Grits.
Across the creek, up a big old hill, year after year, got my hunting gear.
Legacy Farm and Land presents Welcome Back to American Roots Outdoors again. I'm calling in via from my home office. Redbone and Wayne are in the studio. And the topic of our show, this is show number one, is wild turkey. Understanding hunting tactics, calling tactics, the biology of wild turkey. So what we're going to talk about here, and I want to read something to you. I went on the internet. I just want to read this because I find this very informative. And we're talking about the wild turkey here in southern Missouri, all across Missouri. And it says this, not much more than a half a century ago, Missouri's wild turkey population was in danger of disappearing from the landscape by the early 1950s. It was estimated that fewer than 2,500 turkeys were left in only 14 Missouri counties. The restoration is one of the state's great conservation success stories. Missouri is home to the eastern subspecies of the wild turkey, one of the five subspecies native to North America. Once abundant, turkey numbers declined rapidly during the early 1900s, as they did in much of the eastern United States. Regulated harvest and habitat destruction caused an extensive deforestation, uncontrolled burning, and free-range grazing resulted in the population's near demise in Missouri. In the early 1950s, intensive habitat management on several Ozark refuges and modification of the canonet set the stage for a historic wildlife restoration effort. The canonet allowed biologists to capture flocks of wild turkeys in areas where they were abundant and relocate them to other parts of the state that had adequate habitat. Initiated in the mid-1950s, Missouri turkey restoration efforts, which spanned more than two decades, involved the relocation of more than 2,600 turkeys to 213 sites in 91 counties here in Missouri. In less than a half a century, Missouri turkey population went from the brink of expiration or localized extinction to an estimated 300,000 to 400,000 birds among the largest populations in the nation. Many private landowners in Missouri are interested in creating and maintaining habitat for wild turkeys. This guide on this site provides recommendations for doing just that. But for learning about specific habitat management practices, it's important to build basic knowledge about turkey biology, population dynamics, and habitat needs. The broader information throughout this, what I'm reading, will help landowners and managers better understand the value of implementing specific habitat management practices.
Okay.
Your input. We talked, what you just heard me read, we were on the brink of extinction.
But yeah, you know, that is one of the great success stories in all of conservation in the entire United States. And that is the restoration of the turkey population in Missouri. And now other states, you know, over the past 20 or 30 years have used that same model.
Right.
To try and bring their turkey populations up to the to where Missouri is, including Arkansas and including a number of other states around. So, yeah, it's one of the great accomplishments. And the same thing can be said, Alex, about the deer population in Missouri. It was in the same way, and the bears and the elk as well, which is, you know, those restoration projects are going on now. So,
right.
Yeah, one of the great success stories in all of conservation in the history of the United States.
Well, and here's a couple numbers for you, Alex, that you may not have known. And when it first started hunting here, there was only 700 hunters for the 14 counties
right.
that had it, and 94 birds were taken.
Yep.
And then last year, 44,543 birds were taken. So think about the number, and just that short, and you know, you look at the light, the years, that's not very long, that that short time span there that we went to pretty much harvesting 43,500 more birds than what we did when this first started.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's success.
Yep.
Well, if you think about it, Missouri's great role model states on these restoration programs. But again, I want to emphasize for the third time, we was on the brink of extinction because of no regulations. And people doing burns across the country was ruining nests, etc. So it's a true success story to what they've done. What I want to do here in segment three coming up, we're going to talk about the biology of a wild turkey and understand them even more. So again, this is going to be an 8-show series that I'm wanting to do through the months of February and March, maybe even into April, possibly. And we're going to have special guests come in with us, talk about the wild turkey.
Yeah, and Alex, and you know, the thing about the extinction or the almost the elimination of the turkeys in Missouri, I think there were a lot of factors there. You know, one was, and this is not negative on anybody because people just didn't know back then.
Mm-hmm.
But one was the destruction of the habitat. You mentioned burning, logging at that time in you know, heavily populated areas of turkeys, and people just needing food. I mean, you're talking about the Great Depression right before that, and, you know, people in the Ozarks suffered. They needed food. They just went out and killed a turkey. I mean, and that goes back to the lack of regulation. But that's why those things are so important now that we have rules and regulations, is to maintain the population for everyone to enjoy. So, and again, not a knock on anybody or anything.
No, we're not.
But it was just a way of life.
Right.
That almost led to the extinction of the wild turkey in the state of Missouri.
And then you had a couple other factors, yeah, too. You had pesticides that were being used that made the eggs, you know, shells thinner, yep, more fragile. Then you also had the pollution of the water they were talking about, and the rerouting, yep, of some of the streams in that, you know, the turkeys had relied on that were now rerouted, and they just didn't have those supplies anymore.
Yep.
It goes back to how we talk every week, you know, pretty much no matter what animal we're talking about, water, food, shelter, yep, the three necessities.
Yeah, it was it's a sad story to a happy story.
Right.
I mean, the great American.
Exactly. Guys, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about wild turkey biology and the life history and the physical characteristics here in the Midwest. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more American Roots Outdoors right after this.
Hi, I'm Preston Pittman, and you're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and his friends.
In my old pair of hunting boots, passed on down, planted deep in the ground, around your heart, so you never gotta worry what the wind might.
Hey guys, it's food plot planting time here in the Ozarks and all across the country. What are you planting this year, Wayne?
I'm going to put some smorgasbord in with a whole lot of clover.
You're going to put some extra clover in it.
What? Smorgasbord? What is smorgasbord?
Man, it is a variety of annuals and perennials that'll get you through fall time, winter time, and all the way into spring.
It's awesome. You want to plant healthier food plots to track all kinds of game? Go to www.eagleseed.com. It's a smorgasbord. You know, we all get tired of certain things. The smorgasbord has everything. Your deer will love it. Eagleseed.com.
American Roots.
Mission presents. Welcome back to America Reach Outdoors. Again, this is segment three of our eight-show series that we're doing on the wild turkey hunting and calling techniques, tactics, and understanding the biology scout from scouting all the way to taking care of that gobbler in the field and preparing it for a meal. Again, this is segment three. And where I want to pick up here, guys, is the wild turkey biology and life history and the physical characteristics. Again, I found this subject matter on the internet. And it says this. Turkeys, the largest game bird in North America, are gallinaceous birds. A group that includes pheasants, quail, and grouse. These birds have short beaks and wings, feed and nest on the ground, and have young that leave the nest shortly after hatching. Adult males, commonly called gobblers, average 17 to 21 pounds. Female turkeys or hens average 8 to 11 pounds. A juvenile male is called a jake. A female young turkey is called a jenny. Several physical characteristics help identify male and female turkeys. In addition to being larger than hens, gobblers have a colorful, unfeathered head and neck that are red, white, and blue. Pointing that out, we never want to wear those colors while we're turkey hunting, guys. You never want to wear them white t-shirt underneath your camouflage or wear anything white whatsoever, right, or red or blue. Okay, males are also darker overall with black-tipped breast feathers and a feather-like appendage called a beard protruding from the neck above the breast. Unlike feathers, turkey beards are not molted. They grow throughout a bird's life. Although friction from the ground accumulated snow and ice in winter reduced their length. About 5% of the hens have beards, but theirs are typically shorter and thinner than those of males. Male turkeys also have a spur on the lower part of each leg, which is much longer than the tiny button spur that hens may have. Hens are also much smaller and more drab colored than males. With buff-tipped breast feathers, their heads are predominantly blue with a feather track that extends up to the back of their neck. Several characteristics help determine a turkey's age. Adult turkeys may have symmetrically tail fans, whereas the middle 4 to 6 feathers of a juvenile's tail fan are longer than the outside feathers. In adult turkeys, the white barring of the 9th and 10th primary wing feathers extends to the tips. In juvenile turkeys, the feather tips are more pointed, and the white barring does not extend to the tip of the 10th, and sometimes 9th. Primary wing feather, beard, and spur length also help differentiate the adult and juvenile males. Most adult males have beards longer than 6 inches. Most are at least 8 inches. During the first spring of a male's turkey life, its beard is typically only 3 to 4 inches long. Though spurs grow continuously like beards, they do not wear down easily. The spurs of juvenile males average 1/4 inch long during their first spring. The spurs of adult male turkeys typically are at least 7/8 inch long. So we've learned a lot about the color differences of the male and female turkeys, and we've understood here in this segment of what a young turkey is and an adult turkeys on both sides of the chromosome. X and Y chromosome. So the jake is a young turkey and the jenny is a young hen. The adult gobbler is what we call a mature gobbler.
Yeah, what I thought was really interesting there, Alex, was the statistic that up to 5% of female turkeys could have a beard.
Could have a beard. That's what it said. That's according to studies from biologists across the nation.
That's higher than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I was going to say probably twice as high as I thought it would be. You know, and every year you hear about people seeing, you know, bearded hens, and, right. and some bearded hens get killed. But 5%, that's a pretty high number, actually.
I do know this, and I've shared this in some of our shows in the past, that the old-timers, you know, and you want to listen to these old-timers talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been there, and they've seen things, and, you know, you got to take your hat off to a lot of these farmers that's done, put in a great effort to help restore the wild turkeys, too, and letting, you know, creating habitat, you know, not clearing out their fence rows, create nesting areas and creating brush piles, et cetera. But the old timers always told me as a kid growing up, do not shoot a bearded hen.
Right.
Those bearded hens are predominantly a dominant turkey that seems to carry a stronger gene, has better eyesight, is more dominant to help the other turkeys survive through the winter months.
That would make sense.
I always took that to heart, and I believe that. I've never shot a bearded hen, and I couldn't shot many of them. So I'm not telling people not to shoot a bearded hen. I'm just telling you what old-timers told me. I just wanted to share that. Wayne?
I wonder what that would be, fact to fiction on that. You know, myth to what actual biology, you know, proves to be correct. I mean, you think about it, those old-timers didn't have the biology they do now to be able to back up what they believed. And I'm going to research that this week and come back.
I would think it's absolutely true because those guys were watching those birds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and today, you know, with cameras and electronics and high-powered binoculars and spotting scopes and all that stuff, sometimes we watch all these animals from afar. And back in the day, those guys, they were watching those turkeys up close, and they were watching them a lot.
Right.
I mean, they were going out, you know, before turkey season every day and checking on how those turkeys were acting. And so I would say that you know, what Alex was talking about, I would say that's absolutely spot on, just because they were out there watching those birds and seeing it every day.
And it wouldn't surprise me, because a lot of this stuff that you hear old timers talk about 50, you know, 75 years later, they say they were right.
Still stands true.
Still stands true. That's
stands
right.
True today.
Yeah. I want to say, also share this. I'm getting my information that I'm reading to everyone here from University of Missouri Extension. That's where I've got this off their site.
Hmm.
And again, it's great, you know, great information for people to learn. You can also go read this, but I always take to heart what the old timers have to say, you know. And my dad, you know, he never would want to shoot a hen with a beard either.
Mm-hmm.
And my brothers, but you know, we got to take our hat off to MDC. And if you think about the first restoration program ever started in Missouri, right here in our county, Shannon County, Peck Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 40s, early 50s is where it all started. And, yeah, you know, you hear people say, man, they're trapping our turkeys. They're taking our turkeys and trading them for rattlesnakes and otters. And this. Yeah, they did trade some for otters, I believe, mm-hmm. and for elk.
Yeah, but, well, other animals that were native to the state that have disappeared.
Yeah, but I do know this. The last 6-7 years here in the Ozarks has been a tough on nesting and our success rate of poults to hens surviving. The northern part of Shannon County has been a lot better than the southern part. And we got counties like Oregon and Ripley that's really struggling. And from my research and talking to other turkey hunters, it seems that they've had a decent hatch.
Uh-huh.
What happens in southern Missouri is completely different than central and northern Missouri.
Yep.
You know, you can't go by just what one county does. You know, you got to take all counties into account to talk about the success story and to what's really going on. There are some counties that's had terrible hatches, and their numbers are still really low. So think about that.
Yeah, turkey hunting, maybe more so than any other hunting, really depends on your success depends on your local numbers.
Well,
a fair statement?
You know, we've got a wildlife management series show, like 4 or 5 of them. And again, I want to reiterate this and repeat this. You got to take your hat off to these guys that's trapping and predator hunting.
Mm-hmm.
They're helping our turkey numbers come back. And I want to say this, too. Everybody all said, oh, man, we had a great hatch this year. Well, there's no acorns for the turkeys to eat right now. And that's why you're seeing turkeys in fields, because they're trying to find anything they can to eat. Mm-hmm. And again, where it's legal in your state, your county, we encourage you to help these turkeys survive. And what I'm feeding is buck grits, and I also add wheat feed and sunflower seeds into this product, which gives them more protein. They need protein. They need carbs is what they need. And I encourage that where it's legal within your county or state.
All right, Alex, we need to stop right there and go to a break. We'll be back with our final segment of American Roots Outdoors Radio for this week right after this.
Hey, y'all, it's Tyler Farr, and you're hanging with me and my good buddy, Alex Rutledge, on American Roots Outdoors.
Accurate, deadly, dependable, Hornady ammunition. From a two-man operation in 1949 to a world-leading innovator of bullet, ammunition, reloading tool, and accessories design and manufacturer today. Hornady, each piece is hand-inspected to ensure consistency and quality. Ammunition engineered to perform flawlessly. Simply put, the best. Hornady ammunition. Find Hornady ammunition at a retailer near you and at Hornady.com.
Welcome back to American Roots Outdoors. This is show number one on turkey hunting tactics and understanding the biology of the wild turkey. Again, we're going to talk about eight show series of turkeys. We're talking about vocalization, scouting, the biology. Right now, show number one here is about biology of the wild turkey. And this segment here, we're going to talk about reproduction, segment four, the last segment of the radio show, reproduction in the nesting ecology. So did you know turkeys spend the winter in large flocks to help them find food and avoid predators? As March arrives, these large flocks begin to break up. Gobblers, which have spent the winter together, begin to join flocks of hens. The daylight hours increase gobblers' testosterone levels. Their behavior begins to change, intensifying as the breeding season draws nearer. The first noticeable change in their behavior prior to the breeding season is when the male turkeys begin to gobble before leaving their tree roost at daylight. They spend brief periods strutting for hens with their tail fans raised and spread, body feathers erect, and the wings dragging along the ground. Male turkeys fight to determine the social status to establish their dominance. Dominant gobblers will begin to assert their presence to hens even before the winter flocks break up. As winter flocks disband, turkeys often travel 1 to 3 miles to their spring range. Juveniles often travel further. After dispersal, dominant gobblers will often associate with a harem of hens, whereas younger subordinate males often remain together. As hens become more physiologically ready to breed, they signal their receptivity to males. Although turkeys become sexually mature at about 1 year of age, some jakes do breed. Older males breed most of the hens. A turkey's nest consists of simple, shallow depression on the ground and dense cover. In Missouri, egg laying typically begins in early April, and hens usually lay about one egg per day. During this period, hens spend little time at the nest, covering it with leaves when departing. After they lay a typical clutch of 10 to 12 eggs, hens will spend about 22 to 23 hours a day on the nest, incubating, leaving only to eat and drink and defecate. Although the hens do not cover the nest during these breaks, the light-colored speckled eggs blend in well with the surrounding leaf litter. Despite the camouflage eggs and the dense cover of nest sites, most nests are lost to predators each year. About 50% of the adult hens will attempt a second nest if their first attempt is not successful. Juvenile hens are much less likely to re-nest should their first nest fail. Think about that. You know, and I've shared this story, and I'm going to share it again. I have security cameras on my house, and I'll never forget that in the middle of the night, one of my hens did not go back in the pen, and we got footage to this day of hen turkey being attacked by three raccoons chasing her in the yard, and they catch her and kill her in my yard. Coons are a big nemesis. Possums, skunks, fox, coyotes, bobcats, even eagles are nemesises, and they are predators to the wild turkey. I'm not saying kill an eagle, because that's illegal. That's federal.
Yeah.
But I'm saying trap as many predators you can and obey the game laws. So we've all got to do our part to help this success story of the wild turkey by controlling the predator numbers. Wayne, Redbone?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. And I think the raccoons are the biggest culprit. I mean, and what you were reading there just kind of confirms that. And the reason is because we just don't have any coon hunters anymore. The pelts aren't worth anything, not worth the time, not worth, you know, the upkeep of keeping dogs take care of coons. So I don't know what the fix is there other than for more folks to get out there and start hunting coons. But that's the biggest nemesis. And we talked, you know, the last few weeks about coyotes and trapping and
right.
And that. And they're a major nemesis, too, but probably pales in comparison to damage that the coons are doing to the turkey.
Yeah, and actually we had Rena Tile on a couple years ago. It was 2022 mm-hmm. we had her on, and they were 2 years into a five-year study about the biology of the turkeys here in Missouri and about why they declined, what's causing the decline. And I'd love to get her back on and see what's, you know, 2 years later, what are some of the results? What are they finding are the nemesis, you know, what predators are they finding being the one causing the most problems? And again, that could go also on where do you live? You know, what's, you know, causing the problems? Are you more rural? Are you more urban? But, I think some of the results that the MDC department there with the studies they did should be pretty intriguing, you know, 2 years down the road.
Absolutely.
I do want to say this, too. Another nemesis that we need to focus on is, you know, there seems to be more and more people moving here in the Ozarks, especially our area. When people bring in their pets and they're not keeping their pets put up like their house cats, there's more house cats showed up on my place than I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And dogs running loose. Those are a huge nemesis as well.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's why it's so important for people to keep their dogs and their cats put up. You know, don't think a cat won't raid a nest, too, and a dog.
Yep.
So we need to all be good stewards and take care and keep our animals put up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have you ever had a dog get into a chicken pen and get one and get one egg? That dog's going to go get eggs every opportunity
he can.
And he finds a turkey nest and he has an egg, he's going to go that turkey nest every day.
Yep.
Just the way it is. It's the way they're biologically built.
Yeah.
Every wild animal, including people, we look for the easy meal. And a turkey nest is an easy meal for those animals that find it.
Some people just don't get it. Some people just don't understand the importance of taking care of their pets and keeping them up. You know, you've got to do your part. You know, being a good neighbor is what it's all about. And sometimes people's dogs get out. And that happens.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they don't mean for it to happen. But you've got some people that's not keeping their dogs up at all. They just let them run loose.
Yeah.
You know, I had problems last year with three different dogs coming in here. And I finally caught them. And I called the landowner, and he come and got them. And I said, listen, I'm not being a butthole or nothing. But, you know, you got a lot of serious hunters right here in the Ozarks. If it had been somebody else, they're liable to have shot and killed your dogs. I said, I don't do that.
Right.
But I said, we've all got to do our part and respect each other and be good neighbors by keeping our pets up.
Well, and another thing that we've been finding with the sheriff's department, talking to them, is that people move out and they're leaving their pets behind.
Yeah.
You know,
lot of abandoned.
A lot of abandoned. You look at some of these dogs you see running around, they're skin and bones.
Yep.
But also, people, they get too many pets on their farm, they can't take care of them. They want pets, and they got big hearts, and I understand having a big heart. If you can't take care of them, and I'm going to wrap the show with this here, then we're going to go into the bonus segment, do not get animals. Get them. If you can't keep them up, you can't take care of them, you don't need to have animals.
Yep.
We're going to wrap up the show here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're going to do the bonus segment. In the bonus segment, we're going to talk about the brood rearing season. Talk about incubation, how the hen protects the nest, all that in the bonus segment. Remember, the outdoors is about us sharing the outdoors. Wayne's going to talk about the bonus segment. Wayne, take over.
And to listen to the bonus segment, just tune into your favorite podcast carrier on your phone, your tablet, or your computer, and just type in American Roots Outdoors, click like, follow, and listen to our shows.
Again, we want to say thank you. Share the outdoors with a kid. Take somebody and share the great outdoors, God's creation. And always remember,
when your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind.
So you never got to worry what the wind might do. American Roots.
Thank you for joining us for today's American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge. You can find us on Facebook. Look us up on the World Wide Web at AmericanRootsOutdoors.com. We'll be back again next week on this great radio station.
From a whippoorwill to an old owl's hoot, sitting still till it's time to shoot. American Roots. Take it to a holler, take it to a field, across a creek, up a big old hill. Year after
year. Do you want to sell your land? Do you want to buy land, hunting land, farmland? Contact Legacy Farm and Land Specialist, LLC. Ryan McKinley, tell us about Legacy.
Legacy Farm and Land Specialist, LLC is based out of Poplar Bluff, Missouri. We service all the state of Missouri. We're opening up an office in Kentucky. Come and see us.
There you have it, folks. Legacy Land and Farm Specialist, LLC. Buy, sell, auction. Ryan McKinley, 573-683-1449.
In my old pair of hunting boots, passed on down, planted deep in the ground, around your heart, so you never got a...
Wise Eye presents, welcome back to American Roots Outdoors, our bonus segment. If you're listening to this, you're listening to probably your favorite podcast listener. Again, this is show number one of understanding the wild turkey, turkey hunting tactics, and understanding biology. We're going to cover everything from scouting all the way to closing the deal on that gobbler, calling to that gobbler, vocalizations, to preparing that bird, cooking that bird in an 8-part series, maybe even more. We plan on doing this through the whole month of February and March, maybe even into April. We've covered everything from the biology of understanding the restoration program and to understanding the difference between hens and gobblers and jennies and jakes. And what I want to talk about right now, Wayne Redbone, is the brood rearing season. Did you know the incubation period for the wild turkey lasts about 28 days? Within 2 days from the time they first begin to chip away at the inside of an eggshell, young turkeys called poults are following the hen in search of food. In Missouri, most poults hatch in late May or early June. Although poults are very mobile and can feed themselves immediately after hatching, they cannot fly until about 2 weeks of age. Did you guys know that?
I didn't know. And actually, I thought it might have been a little bit longer than that. And Alex, something too, when we're doing the radio show, we're talking about the fact that the turkeys will lay an egg a day until they finish their cycle. Does that mean then... You know, and then in 28 days, those eggs begin to hatch. So if she laid 12 eggs over 12 days, that means there's going to be another poult every day for 12 days. Is that typically the way it goes, or do most of those poults all start to come out of the eggs at the same time?
They usually come out of the eggs pretty much the same time, and how it's controlled is by her body temperature, okay, keeping those eggs warm. As she gets nearer to the end of her clutch, it could be 10 to 12, 15 eggs. I've seen 15, 16 eggs in a clutch.
Mm-hmm.
Once she gets those eggs laid and she's not bothered, she lays on those eggs for 28 days.
Okay, so then's when the 28 days would start.
Correct. Okay. So the secret's getting that temperature, controlled temperature that whole time of that clutch, right, that hatch.
Yeah, I was just confused.
Think about being a wild turkey, then I'm going to move on here. How many animals are trying to eat them the minute that they're hatched out of an egg? And think about the survival rate. It makes you have a different respect for the wild turkey and hunting the wild turkey instead of going out there killing all you can kill. Once you understand the ecosystem, the biology of the wild turkey, and deer as well, mm-hmm, you'll have a different respect. Wayne?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I agree 100% on, is that people need to, you know, respect their animals that they're after. And if you get out there and say, you know, you got a guy that'll be out there, you know, bragging, you know, man, I shot 4 times this year, you know, whatever the legal limit is, let's say, why? Yeah. You know, I mean, that's always my question, is why did you shoot so much when you know the population's down in this area? You know, other than you just want to, you know, stroke your own ego.
Well, you know, you'd think that everybody would want to share with their grandkids or their kids so they could experience exactly what you and I've experienced. And that's the message we want to send to people. Don't be game hogs, you know, shoot your limit or whatever, but take kids, get these kids involved. That's the only way we're going to keep our sport strong. And it also helps us as pro gun owners. You know, the more kids we get involved, the stronger we get. I'm going to go back to our subject matter here. Again, pick it up. They cannot fly until about 2 weeks of age. It says during this time, they spend nights on the ground and are quite vulnerable to predators. Once they start roosting off the ground, their chances of survival increase considerably. Later in the summer, it is common for turkeys to combine into larger breed flocks. Hens that did not hear young often form their own small flocks. After breeding season ends, male turkeys form separate flocks. Pretty unique information there. Think about it. Being a young turkey and you just hatched out of an egg, it's going to be 2 weeks before you can fly from a predator. Something to take into account, too, is think about, if you're managing your property, it's crucial that you have the right habitat. And that's where MDC comes in with their equip programs and educate landowners to create nesting and great habitat and plenty of water. If you'll notice, most of your hens' nests are close to ponds or creeks or something like that, where they can instantly get water to their poults. And that's what they try to do. But what happens also, a loss to poults, is that these wet sprays that we have, as soon as they hatch out of the egg and we've got these cool rains coming, if the mama can't cover them, they get caught, left behind as she's walking through thick grass or orchard grass, whatever it may be. They get lost and they get, you know, they actually freeze to death. So
yeah, it's a tough life being a turkey.
That's probably why they're so hard to hunt. From the time they're born to the time to the end of their life, there's something always trying to eat them.
Yeah, or destroy them in some other kind of way. So.
Right.
Yeah, that does, I mean, only makes sense, Wayne. That is exactly what makes them so weary as adults, was, you know,
exactly
what they had to go through to get to adulthood.
Right.
Well, guys, we're going to wrap the show up here. We're going to talk about show 2 coming up next Wednesday. That's when we plan on recording. We're going to talk more about the biology of wild turkeys. Then we're going to get into the vocalizations, et cetera, throughout this 8-part series, possibly more. I'm going to have special guests on here talking about great subject matter to educate people more on the wild turkey. And I want to say this too, take your kids. I can't emphasize enough. Share with your grandkids or neighbors' kids about God's creation. Take them out where they get to kill a gobbler or not. Let them hear the turkeys gobble and let them understand how good the eyesight, the hearing is of the wild turkey. And again, remember, we're all stewards, aren't we, Wayne Redbone? It's our crucial part of us to do our part to help the wild turkey and any wildlife.
Well, and our ancestors. I mean, if our ancestors would not have bought into MDC's plan 70 years ago to reintroduce the wild turkeys, we wouldn't be here talking about wild turkeys. And we've got to continue to carry on that tradition of helping to protect as well as hunt these birds.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to wrap it up here, guys, but I'm going to go down here in my pond. I bought me a sump pump, and I'm going to pump some chemical, like a chemical. It's not a chemical. It's a gel by pondenviro.com. It's called DB110. You mix it with water, and it turns into a gel. And it's going to help seal the bottom of my pond. I'm still working on my pond. It's starting to hold water better and better. I just have to put more of the DB110 in there. Again, thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Redbone, for being a great co-host and everything you do. And to all of our sponsors that support us and all of our listeners. And share the outdoors and always remember,
when your roots run deep and strong,
There's no reason to fear the wind.
Hey, turkey hunters, this is Alex Rutledge. Have you heard about Apex Ammunition? If you haven't, they are American-owned, American-made, made one at a time, hand-loaded. These turkey loads will give you the confidence that you need to close the deal on that old Hook Daddy Longbeard gobbler. For more information, go to www.apexammunition.com.